As you're learning about your child being highly sensitive, have you ever wondered if maybe you are also highly sensitive? If you've ever wondered that, this episode is for you. I'm going to share my own experience as a highly sensitive child and how that has impacted me parenting highly sensitive kids. Let's get into it. Parenting is the hardest job ever, and parenting a highly sensitive child who's struggling can feel downright impossible. If you're suffering through endless meltdowns, walking on eggshells, and losing sleep worrying, you've landed in the right place. Because I'm here to help you feel good about parenting your highly sensitive child. I'm Dr. Hillary, clinical psychologist and mom of three, and you're listening to the Raised Resilient podcast, where I help you make sense of your child's challenging behaviors and build resilience in the face of their big emotions. So warm up your coffee and grab your earbuds. It's time to turn your child's sensitivity into their superpower. Hey friend, welcome back to Raised Resilient and to another one of my parenting reflections episodes where I share something from my own real life parenting highly sensitive kids in hopes that I can maybe help you feel a little less alone on this journey. So I have alluded many times on this podcast to the fact that I was a highly sensitive child who is now a highly sensitive person. And so I wanted to dive a little deeper into that today and get a little vulnerable and share a little bit about what it was like for me as a kid and how my high sensitivity played out. And maybe you'll relate. Maybe you'll understand your child a little bit better after hearing my experience. Either way, I hope this episode feels helpful and supportive to you. And as a reminder, I am doing a giveaway to incentivize you to leave a review of this podcast, to share your experience with other parents who are wondering, is this podcast going to be helpful for me? And is it going to be supportive of me raising my highly sensitive child? Because I get it. As a busy mom, I know that going out of your way to leave a review might sound like a little thing, but it's often a big thing when you actually think about logging into your platform and figuring out how to actually submit a review. So I wanted to make it a little bit more fun and provide a little bit of incentive for you to actually take that extra step, because it really will help not only me, but the parents who are thinking about listening to this podcast and who maybe wouldn't find it without your reviews. Because the different podcast platforms will recommend shows based on their reviews and based on how recently they have reviews. So if you leave a review of this podcast between now and May 22nd and you send me a screenshot of your review, either through Instagram DM at Raised Resilient or via email, Dr. Hillary, DRHILARY at RaisedResilient.com, or you can also enter by going into the Facebook group. If you're a member, of course, if you're not a member, you should totally join us. But you can also enter the giveaway by posting a screenshot of your review and tagging me in the Facebook group. So that's a third way that you can enter. And if you're not a member of the Facebook group, you can join at facebook.com/groups/raisedresilient. You will be entered into a drawing to receive a free sensory kit of your choosing for your child mailed to your home. And I will be sending a sensory kit from my favorite makers of sensory kits, Young, Wild, and Friedman. And I have no financial relationship with them. We just really love their sensory bins. So wanted to share the love and to make leaving a review a little more fun. So thank you so much in advance for taking the time to leave a review of this podcast. I really appreciate it. And now, without further ado, let's get into my experience as a highly sensitive child. So, full disclosure, I didn't really understand myself as a highly sensitive person or therefore a highly sensitive child until more recently, actually. It honestly wasn't until I became a parent myself that I really started to understand my own emotional sensitivity. And for me, it really is emotional sensitivity. I don't really have a lot of sensory sensitivities. Although as a kid, I do remember hating really loud noises like fire trucks. And I definitely can get overstimulated now as a parent if there's a lot going on, right? Like if I'm making dinner and the kids are playing and everything's really loud and there's a lot going on and the dog is barking, I can get really overstimulated. But I just remember feeling things really deeply as a kid and being easily offended and being told all the time, you're too sensitive, you're overreacting, why is this such a big deal? I also remember feeling alone with my feelings a lot, feeling really misunderstood and feeling like I was just alone with these really big feelings. In retrospect, I think my dad is very much also a highly sensitive person. But, you know, growing up in the 50s and 60s, that is not something that was understood about him. And that is not something that his parents had the capacity to nurture in him. He actually had a lot of childhood trauma, and he came into parenting with a lot of emotional reactivity. So he would get overwhelmed, he would get dysregulated, and then he would yell at us and get upset with us because he was dysregulated. And I understand that now. But as a kid, I just understood that my parent was yelling at me and I didn't really understand why. But what I remember is that I, for some reason, would always walk into the fire, so to speak, when my dad was upset. I would walk into that fire and I would advocate for myself and I would tell him why he was wrong and I would try to get him to understand my point of view, to the point that I got myself in so much more trouble. You know what I mean? Like, I just wouldn't let it go because I saw the injustice and I could not advocate for myself. And I remember feeling sort of envious of my brothers who were younger than me, and they would watch me walk into the fire and get shut down. And they would be like, okay, I'm not going to even mess with that. And so by comparison, I felt like I was always getting into trouble and they were always kind of escaping trouble. So that was not fun, you know, feeling like I was always the one in trouble compared to my brothers who never seemed to really challenge my dad and would just kind of do their thing because they had the benefit of watching me too. So that was definitely a tricky dynamic, and I remember that really well. Another dynamic that I remember well is I remember going to my room when I would be upset about an interaction with my parents or I would feel misunderstood, and I remember just crying. I would cry and cry and cry, and I remember feeling like I was just going to cry forever. And looking back, it makes sense that I felt that way because I never had co-regulation or the help of an adult to organize my feelings. I never really understood that it was normal for me to feel the way I was feeling. No one ever said, wow, that makes sense that you're so upset about this. So I definitely internalized the idea that I was too emotional and that if I actually let my emotions come out, I would just cry forever, right? That they were this bottomless pit that needed to be avoided. Now, of course, couple that with growing up in the 80s and 90s when, you know, parenting was all about punishments and rewards. And I definitely also learned that it wasn't okay to show emotion and to move away from emotion because emotion got you into trouble. I'm sure some of you listening can relate pretty hard to that. You know, I also remember some things that happened at school or in childcare settings that really bothered me that I still remember to this day, decades later. We talk all the time about our kids holding it in, holding it together, white knuckling while they're at school or while they're away from us. And I definitely did that. I was not a kid who would ever let a teacher know if I was upset. I had perfect behavior at school. I had perfect grades. I was the model student. But I would have these things happen and I would feel all the feelings about them. And I still remember them to this day, but I never told anybody because I didn't feel like I could. So for example, I remember being in first grade and I remember washing my hands. And then I was like, oh wait, I should use the bathroom too. So I went and used the bathroom, came out, washed my hands again. Very normal thing to do. But this one first grade teacher, not my teacher, had seen me washing my hands. And then she saw me washing my hands again and assumed I had been washing my hands the whole time. And she scolded me for wasting time. What are you doing washing your hands for 5 minutes? Get back to class, young lady, that kind of thing. And I still remember what that bathroom looked like. And I still remember feeling so misunderstood. Like, how could you make this assumption about me? That's so not even true. That's not even what happened. I felt like a bad kid. And I just felt so much shame. Another example, I remember going to childcare. I had half day kindergarten, so I had to go to this in-home daycare place where my brother also went because he wasn't yet in school for the second half of the school day because my mom was working and my dad was working too. So I got there one day, we were having lunch around the table. I was so excited to see my brother and so proud of my little brother that I held up his hand at the table and I told the teachers, look what we can do. And instead of them sharing my pride or them saying, oh, wow, you have your brother, how exciting, they said, that's not how we sit at the table. Eat your lunch. And of course, I still remember that to this day. I can picture what the table looked like. I can picture where we were sitting. And again, I felt so much shame. I have so many little examples like that of little things that happened that felt so big to me and where there was so much shame. And another thing that I did as a kid, which I hadn't thought about in years, but I actually did a breakthrough call last week with a family whose child would not throw her trash away after lunch because her mom had packed it and she didn't want to throw away something that her mom had given to her. And the parents were just flabbergasted at this. Like, why is this happening? She won't even throw away her trash. And I was like, oh my goodness, that was me as a kid. I definitely did that. And I didn't do it all the time. I did it specifically my second grade year because we had moved out of the home where my parents brought me home when I was born, like the home I had lived in my whole life. And we were living with my grandma for a year. My dad had moved to North Carolina from Pennsylvania already because he was trying to go find a job in North Carolina so that our whole family could move down and join him. So it was just me, my mom, and my brothers living with my grandparents, going to a new school. And it was a pretty big change. I was also selected to be in the AIG program, which is academically and intellectually gifted. I was tested, I guess, at my previous school, and this was a pullout program. So you would get pulled out of class to go to this other class to do enriching academic activities. And I was the only one in my second grade class in the AIG program. And my teacher would always get super annoyed with me when it was time for me to go, as if it was my fault, as if I asked to do this. Anyway, that coupled with the fact that I had gone to a different school every single year thus far, and this school so far was the biggest change because I also moved to a different home and was living with my grandma. And I loved my grandparents. They were wonderful people, and it had nothing to do with actually being with them. It was just a big change. You know, I didn't have my own room full of all my toys. We were living somewhere temporary while we were getting ready to move out of state, and it was just this really big transition. And so that is when I started to not throw my trash away. I would just bring it back home to my mom because she packed my lunch, and that was a way that I felt connected to her. And so as a highly sensitive kid, this was just this little way that I could stay connected to her without feeling like I was throwing away something she had given to me. So I hadn't thought about that in years. And then I spoke with this family last week, and they were telling me that this is what their child was doing. And I was like, oh my goodness, I did that as a kid too. I also remember, especially as an older kid and a teenager, I remember specifically yelling at my parents, go away, I hate you. And I remember feeling this very conflicted feeling of being angry with them, but actually not wanting them to go away at all, wanting them to come, wanting them to connect with me, wanting them to co-regulate with me, but not wanting to ask them and actually feeling like I needed to push them away, even though I knew I needed them, which we talk about all the time on this podcast, right? That is something that highly sensitive kids do all the time. And they do push us away when they need us most. And then they have a hard time letting us know that they need us. And maybe they're conflicted. Maybe they feel two ways at the same time. They both need to push us away, sort of to reject us before they can be rejected. And they also need us close. And I remember feeling that way as a child. I remember screaming, I hate you, and then instantly regretting it and wishing they would come back. And of course, I was not going to tell my parents, I want you to come back, or I don't mean it. There was way too much shame involved in the fact that I had even said it in the first place to go back to my parents and say, actually, just kidding, I need you, I'm sorry I said that. So that is really interesting to me as a parent, because I remember so specifically those moments. And it's funny because I don't have a ton of specific memories from my childhood. I do, I have memories. But these memories really do stand out. And that's one of the things I remember. I specifically remember how it felt to reject my parents when I needed them the most. So those are just a few of the examples of how being highly sensitive showed up for me as a kid. I knew that I had really big emotions. I knew that I was a deep feeler. And I always kind of felt like that was some sort of tragic flaw, right? That something was wrong with me, that it would have been better to not be a deep feeler. And it's interesting because when I met my husband, he also is a highly sensitive person. He was told his entire childhood, you're too sensitive, get over it, why are you making such a big deal? But he had figured out that his feelings were okay. It wasn't his feelings that were the problem. He had figured out already on his own that it's really what we do with our feelings that counts. And that was an idea that I had never thought about, which is wild because when I met my husband, I was already in my second year of my doctoral program to become a psychologist. But I think at that point in my training, I still thought that the feelings were the problem, right? When I would have anxious or depressed clients, that we had to get rid of those feelings. And actually, that was never the case. Our feelings are never the problem. It's how we make meaning of our feelings and what we do with our feelings that really matters. So that was a really interesting idea to me. And it's one that I initially rejected because I felt like my husband was trying to say that my feelings didn't matter, which is never what he was saying. So in our early dating life, we had a lot of conflict around how I wanted him to show up when I was having an emotion, how I needed to show up for him when he was having an emotion, because as two highly sensitive people, we kept offending each other. And then both of us kind of unsure around how to navigate that conflict and how to express our needs in a healthy way. And it's taken us years of really actively and purposefully communicating about our feelings, about our needs, to get to a place where I feel like we really do a great job of understanding each other, communicating through conflict, and working together. But that was not always the case. And I feel like two highly sensitive, reactive people in a relationship can be a recipe for disaster if you don't actively develop those skills that really, as adults, we should have already had. But growing up when we did, we didn't, because all we were really taught was like, get away from your feelings because they're bad. And then becoming a parent was also a really interesting experience for me because, again, you've heard me say so many times on this podcast, I had worked with children, I had worked with reactive children, children who would say awful things, very traumatized children who would lash out with physical aggression. And I was very comfortable with all of that when it was in a clinical setting. I knew exactly what to do. I knew how to build rapport with these kids. I was unruffled, as Janet Lansbury would say. And then I had my first child, and my sweet little highly sensitive toddler triggered me more than any teenager I had ever worked with. And that was shocking to me. I did not expect this. I did not see this coming. And you've all heard me say this and share my story many times on this podcast, but I think as a highly sensitive person, parenting hit me hard, especially because I was not prepared. I really thought I was going to be this perfect parent because I had had all this training and I had worked with all these kids. And that seems so ridiculous saying that out loud now, but I really thought I was just going to be great at this. Like, why would I ever have to struggle in parenting? I had all the resources, but I really didn't. I had no awareness of my own triggers. I had no awareness of how my childhood needs had or had not been met. I had no awareness of myself as a highly sensitive person. Again, I do think I had some internalized shame around the depth of my emotions, but I did not understand why I had such big emotions or why I hadn't developed the skills to manage my emotions in a healthy way. I arrived at parenting still learning how to manage my emotions. And I bet a lot of you can relate to that because we were simply not given those skills. We were not taught those skills as children. But I definitely struggled a lot as a parent. I definitely struggled with big emotions. I struggled being triggered. I struggled with postpartum anxiety after my second child was born. And I struggled with some mild, what I recognize now as postpartum depression when my first was born. And I was able to get through both of those things without going to therapy. But man, if I could do it over now, I would definitely have gone to therapy and gotten the support that I deserved. But I felt like I just had to white knuckle and tough it out because that's how I had gotten through my entire life having big emotions, was just to white knuckle and kind of just stuff them down. And it is only in the last 5 years that I have actively practiced feeling my feelings, and I have gotten really good, not perfect, nowhere close. We will never be perfect at this, but I've gotten really good at allowing my emotions the space they need to exist, at acknowledging and validating my emotions, at acknowledging that my emotions make sense and they're allowed to be here, and at accepting personal responsibility for what I do with my emotions. These were all ideas that I understood in theory as I was becoming a psychologist and before I became a parent, but I've only just started to put them into practice more recently. It really helped me to go to therapy, specifically EMDR therapy, and process my childhood, process the unmet needs, because I think that's really important. And if you are also struggling with not having some of your childhood needs met and wanting to sort of help your brain make sense of all of that, EMDR and brain spotting, I can't say enough good things about those therapy modalities. They're really, really wonderful for you to process the needs you didn't get met and how those are now showing up as triggers in your parenting. It has also been massively helpful to me doing the work that I'm doing, helping parents understand and teach skills to their highly sensitive kids has helped me level up my own emotion regulation capacity. You have to really understand something to teach it, right? So I might have been doing something my whole life and not understand why I'm doing it or what I'm doing. But if I'm going to teach parents how to do that in their own lives, I've got to really understand it enough to be able to teach it. And so that has helped me as well. And also just having empathy for my highly sensitive kids through the lens of my own experience as a child has been massively helpful in shifting how I'm showing up for them and helping me to be that sturdy leader for them. Please know, if you are also a highly sensitive person, that your sensitivity is a superpower. It is not something to be ashamed of, even though you likely felt that growing up. It is not something that is wrong with you. It is actually, just like for your child, it is a superpower. And if you have spent your entire life feeling bad about your sensitivity, I see you. I get it. I did too. It's really, 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 really common for parents of highly sensitive kids to recognize that they are also highly sensitive or deeply feeling. So you are not alone. Really, really common that at least one, if not both parents, are also highly sensitive people. So you're not alone. You're in really good company, and your sensitivity truly is a superpower. You've just got to learn to hone it if you have not already. So I hope this episode is helpful. I hope it's been helpful for me to give somewhat of a vulnerable share and let you see into my own experience as a highly sensitive child, because maybe you can relate. And if nothing else, it'll help you understand your highly sensitive child a little bit better. Thank you so much for listening. I so appreciate you being here. Don't forget to leave a review. You have between now and May 22nd if you want to be entered into the giveaway. And I will catch you in the next episode. Want to continue the conversation and connect with other parents who get it? Join our free Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/raised resilient. I can't wait to see you in there. And if you loved today's episode, I'd be so honored if you'd share it with a friend who needs it. Thanks for listening. And until next time, we've got this.